And in the same way that Wear OS doesn't feel like a platform until it has a premium smartwatch.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Hmm. I think Wear OS has it's a baby. It's a baby that hasn't reached toddler age yet, or is it past? Are we in adolescence? Where are we with Wear OS? If we're going to continue this,
5 years? Are we?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's just jump into Wear OS. Wear OS feels like it is stagnant. It's stunted growth, if we want to continue extending the metaphor, I guess. It's been 3 years old for how long? 8 years, maybe?
6 years. March.
Yeah.
Yes, the very odd thing. They announced it with a weird blog post on March 18, 2014. Then it took I.O. for us to see the first devices.
Yes.
Because I distinctly remember somebody making like this APK where you could try the emulator on your phone and you could like play around with the OS, with the basic OS that Google shared a few months before the first devices came.
I have to admit, as I always do, that you have far better memory when it comes to minor things like that. But there's so many things to talk about. This week, Qualcomm announced the Snapdragon Wear 4100, which is the most significant bump in, I guess, CPU performance since the Wear, what was it, 2100?
That's fair. 2100.
I don't remember which number it was. Was it 2100?
Yeah.
It's a significant performance boost compared to that chip. It's not that much of a difference. I mean, I guess it's also a pretty big bump compared to the 3100, because the 3100, as you mentioned, is in terms of CPU, I mean, it's the exact same CPU, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, it's a significant bump, but I guess the conversation to have is does it matter? What's the significance of this announcement to you?
So just to briefly recap what was like the key jumps that could be happening in terms of hardware. So it goes from a 28 nanometer process to 12, which this allows in things like 85% faster CPU performance, a 2.5x GPU boost, and 25% better battery life. So those are the raw performance improvements that we hope that Qualcomm is touting for this chip compared to the 3100 in 2018. The basic idea is that this could allow Wear OS to do so much more things. And that's another thing to point out. This announcement was handled completely by Qualcomm. There was no Google didn't, I don't think they released an accompanying statement or anything like that. They didn't reaffirm the OS or anything like that with this announcement. So all we know is these hardware improvements that are coming with the chip. The other important thing is an updated co-processor, which is responsible for the always-on display and which can now handle more tasks like sleep tracking and heart rate monitoring. So it's taking more and more capabilities onto a lower power chip, so it doesn't need to call the CPU. So I guess the way to look at this is in smartphones, especially chips, it hasn't really... Law of performance stopped mattering quite a few smartphone generations ago. And one would wish that you could say the same thing about smartwatches, but from Qualcomm and Wear OS, you simply can't. Performance has never reached a baseline. So I guess the hope of many people is that this chip gets us that barrier, and from a more powerful hardware base, Google and I don't know, app makers could do something more with the platform.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of this, I guess, there's lots of codependencies here, right? Like Google has been stagnant in terms of, I guess, Wear OS's development, but at least that's what it looks like from the outside. But you have to assume that there's significant work being done internally. I don't remember who it was, but one of the execs at Google was asked, I think during the Android Fireside chat during Google I/O last year, they said, "Hey, where's the Wear OS? What about Wear OS? We've not heard anything about Wear OS this whole week. You know, there's a booth and it's got half a dozen Android or Wear OS smartwatches, but you guys didn't say anything about it, and doesn't seem like there's anyone talking about it." And this exec, I don't know if you remember who it was.
Pretty sure it was Dave.
Dave, okay. He said, "Well, did you notice that they're not here?" Basically insinuating that they weren't physically at Google I/O because they were behind their desks working on Wear OS. And so, you've got to assume I think it would be a stretch to think that Google has abandoned Wear OS as a platform. I don't think that we're there yet, although unfortunately my pessimistic outlook would suggest that maybe that's on the horizon. But as of today, this seems to be the beginning of possibly a chain of events. Do you think that this 4100 could be the beginning of a chain of events of some kind of a rebirth in one way or another? Or do you think that this is more just Qualcomm for one reason or another, keeping up with chips of 2017? I mean, that in terms of, I guess, technological prowess, I think that they're pretty far behind the curve, even with all of the significant updates they're making with the 4100. But do you think that there's a chance that this is going to be the first domino that falls of Wear OS? I mean, we've had Wear OS 2.0 already, but you know, the next wave to use terminology.
So I guess this is the best opportunity. This is Google's best opportunity to try again with wearables that they've had in a long time. From purely a technological standpoint, this is their best shot at making another major impression on people in terms of what their and Wear OS powered smartwatches can do. So yeah, I do think that this is going to lead to new devices. Oh, this is definitely going to lead to new devices. Mobvoi has announced that they're planning a chip on based on this 4100 this year. But again, the big question is, of course, what the OS looks like. And from that perspective, it's funny how the focus is indeed on the performance this week, because that's the only thing we know about the future of Wear OS. But at the same time, one can reasonably ask what kind of performance you need out of a smartwatch. It's what most people do with smartwatches is check notifications, maybe do a quick response, the time obviously, and frankly, the 3100 watches are meeting that benchmark, and is why I would say that there's from a business standpoint, there's a viability in Google continuing to maintain the operating system, and partners, mainly the Fossil Group, continuing to make watches. So
yeah,
from that standpoint, yes. But I don't think anybody can, even the biggest Wear OS fan, can reasonably say that they are competing, they're not the Apple Watch, and I don't think they are Samsung's greatest offerings either.
Yeah. So let's, before I ask the next question, which is related, let me tell you where the current state of things are for those that don't know. I mean, I think people, it's easy to live in a bubble thinking that you know, just as we have the duopoly with iOS and Android, that, you know, there's kind of a, you know, a half and half kind of, you know, divide there. I think a lot of people assume that maybe that's the same way with smartwatches, that, you know, Wear OS is Google's. Google has half the market, and Apple has watchOS, and they're the other half of the market. And I think that's just, I mean, it's simply just not the case. If you look at Strategy Analytics' most recent numbers, as of Q1 of this year, Apple has, in terms of, this is vendor market share, so this is units, smartwatch units shipped. Apple has 55% of the market. Samsung, which, as you may know, or as listeners may know, their watches don't run Wear OS. They run a version of Tizen, which is Samsung's own proprietary operating system, make up about 14% of the market. And then Garmin, which is a very famous outdoors GPS, et cetera, brand, Garmin, they make or sell 8% of the market. And then Strategy Analytics puts everyone else in a bucket that makes up 1/5 or around 20% of the market. And so we have to assume that Wear OS watches, as you mentioned, primarily the Fossil group, they might make up what, maybe 10 to 15% of that 20. I don't know for sure, because there's so many smartwatch vendors out there across huge spectrum. I mean, Fitbit is in there somewhere, and Fitbit watches don't run Wear OS. So we can assume, let's just assume that Wear OS smartwatches, Fossil group watches, have 10% of the market. And that's really unfortunate, given how long this has been dragged out, how long Wear OS has been under development, how long Google has had to put together a cohesive strategy. And that's where I'm going with this is, it's nice that the 4100 is here, but is it possible, is Google under the illusion that they can just keep doing what they've been doing, or does there need to be a fundamental paradigm shift of how they're approaching this for Wear OS to have any chance at eating into this 8% that Garmin has, and this 13 or 14% that Samsung has, or even parts of Apple's market share with the Apple Watch? Do you think that they're going to continue doing the same thing, which is basically just keep Wear OS updated vaguely in terms of feature parity, and just let Fossil launch these watches that are kind of across their collection of brands, but really have no meaningful differentiation besides their physical appearance? That's the status quo. And do you think that that Google needs to make a fundamental shift there for them to have any chance?
Yeah, because I think Google is in it to win it. It's a smartwatch. It's a wearable, obviously, and I think from everything that Google's hardware division has been saying about this future of ambient computing, this future of technology being always there for you in whatever form factor, I think it's undeniable that the watch plays a role in that. So with that in mind, I think Google wants, they are totally missing this market. They're totally missing innovations that could be happening. And so, okay, let's take this example. Amid all the COVID-19 thing, everybody has to wash their hands. Everybody wash their hands. And Wear OS released this reminder, this timer that you can activate. It's this Wear OS tile that you can activate to start a hand washing timer. That's nice. That's clever. It's useful. It's legitimately a useful feature to have. And come WWDC last week, Apple released something similar for their smartwatch, for the Apple Watch. But instead, it's automatically activated. It detects hand washing movements, and then it starts a timer automatically for you. That feature, honestly, that feature seemed like something Google should be doing. It really did not seem like an Apple Watch feature to me personally. And I would have thought that Google would have loved a to release some kind of that feature if they were capable. So I think there's all these like these helpful ambient features that just fits into Google's vision of computing that they're totally missing because they don't have something on your body. And that is a key surface to have because wearables can be so much more personal than the smartphone because it's physically on your body a large portion of the day. And I think they're just missing that canvas. And that alone is a big enough motivator for Google to get back into this game. Because like the stuff that Assistant could do so well if it worked well on Wear OS today, which it does not.
Yeah. I'd make the argument that they basically need to kind of start over because I think that their idea with Wear OS was just to emulate the original Android strategy, which Absolutely. Was build the operating system and let the partners come and build the hardware for it. And I think I don't think that works with smartwatches, but I don't know if that works more broadly with wearables because they are fundamentally different platforms. I think we found with the Apple Watch, even though like with the Apple Watch, for example, the vast majority of Apple Watch users are using the Apple Watch as an extension, I guess, an additional experience that builds upon the things they're already doing with their phone or allows them to do things that they would normally do on their phone in a way that is more ambient or whatever. While Apple allows users to, you know, use those watches as LTE watches that function more independent, I think that smartwatches in general, because smartphones aren't going anywhere anytime soon, and smartphones are still so fundamental and so core to the computing experience for most people, that watches are necessarily extensions, not just that they're crippled and that they can't act on their own, but they are just not, and it makes sense. It's natural that they would be extensions to our smartphones. And I think with Google building Wear OS and just letting their partners run away with it or just launch the various hardware, iterations or just experiences, they didn't really take that into account that they really need to. What makes the watch so valuable is that it is an extension of that smartphone experience and it's part of the entire, you know, ecosystem. And, you know, for instance, the smartwatch hand washing feature or whatever, and this is kind of an off the path example, but like, you know, a watch that is built to be a fancy timepiece that is, you know, I don't know, not meant to really get wet, right? Like the Apple Watch is kind of built to be kind of this all-purpose design, which kind of catered to originally with the edition watches, like this super luxury market, and then, you know, the lower end market. But the fundamental design of the watch is the same across the board. You can apply something like a hand watching feature across the board of the Apple Watch without having to consider the various form factors, right? You don't have to think about, oh, that watch has studded diamonds on it. You don't have to think about that when you're building this feature. You just think about building something for the Apple Watch, and there's this unity to it. And I think that with Wear OS is because they opened it up to everyone, which ended up being condensed down to just Fossil. You know, they got a variety of brands on board to sell their version of a very bland watch, smartwatch. But what they didn't get was a whole and unified experience that works well with all Android phones, that takes into account that this is an extension of the smartphone experience. And so, I don't know, it's all kind of vague. I'm trying to pinpoint a more specific idea, but that's kind of my general feeling about this, that none of the Wear OS watches are really that good because they're all crippled by the fact that they're not built in tandem with the Pixel, for example. I mean, I think if Rick's team that is building the Pixel were to build a smartwatch, they would build it maybe perhaps on the Wear OS operating system, but they would build features that tied specifically in with the experience that people are getting by using a Pixel. And that just isn't happening right now because Wear OS watches are made to work with all Android phones. So I just think that's where a lot of the good of the Apple Watch comes from, is how closely tied it is to the Apple Watch or to the iPhone. And that's just not happening with Wear OS.
Yeah, I do agree with the integration. I guess Google's big hope there is Assistant as being the unifying thing across all the platforms. But again, Assistant on Wear OS is pretty bad.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it might be better if the Wear OS team was working closely with the team that's building the Pixel and building the Pixel-specific Android experience. So I don't know. And I just think that they're doing themselves a disservice by thinking that smartwatch can be this open platform like the Android, like Android originally could be. And I think what it's led to is bland hardware, bland fitness options, because nothing, you know, Google Fit is just, you know, one size fits all kind of app, and the interface and the performance has been obviously pretty bad since the beginning. I mean, it's been years since the 2100 got significant CPU bump, and the battery life, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, everything is mediocre because this has
designed for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't excel in any one area. And so, and the other, you know, the alternative is the Apple Watch, which is Apple's obviously building this watch one feature at a time, one aspect of this wearable at a time, closely tied to what it is to use all of Apple's products as an ecosystem as a whole. And I think that's kind of what Rick and Co. are trying to do with, you know, the Nest products and the Pixel and just the assistant being the center of all those experiences. And the watch has just been on the outside. So,
yeah, I do have to say, on those experiences, fundamentally, I think most of the experience, so it's unlike the phones, smartwatches aren't really a vessel for third party experiences. It's all first party at the end of the day. They need to build an intuitive UI, and they need to offer the baseline of features that people expect. So it's a real it's a lot of it is so much up to Google. They have to be the ones that get the experience right. They need to get Wear OS to run better on these new chips, to be more intuitive, to do all that. It is unlike other products and unlike phones or Pixel books or whatever. It's up to them to provide that good end-to-end experience.
Yeah, and I think as much as it's flawed, I think that Samsung is doing a better job of that with its own Tizen-based watches. I think I would probably recommend one of Samsung's Tizen watches as an Android-compatible smartwatch before I would recommend the current iteration of the Wear OS watches from Fossil Group.
Yeah, you know, like, it's the Samsung watches are branded to hell. It's Samsung Pay, it's Samsung Health. The person using, well, I would argue the person using their Samsung smartwatch knows that it's all Samsung. It's there's even Bixby there, isn't there? They know everything's there, and that's to the benefit of the platform.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's move on and talk about some slightly related things. I think Google is has made a very interesting move in the wearables space. Someone in the comments actually during the live stream said, I think Google should basically abandon Wear OS and go all in on a glass refresh. Apple will not go there because they don't want to cannibalize the Apple Watch. Thanks for the comment, Austin. I don't agree that Apple's not going to go there in the sense that they're not going to pursue some kind of smart glass or AR based product because they don't want to cannibalize the Apple Watch. I think that for Apple, it's a both and situation. And I don't think that Google should entirely abandon Wear OS to go all in on a glass refresh, but they are making interesting moves. It seems like their acquisition of North this week, which was finally confirmed, it's a significant evidence of Google's ambitions in the wearables space. And I don't know, with Fitbit, Google tried to argue that was somehow going to benefit Wear OS in some weird roundabout way. They didn't make any similar claims with North this week.
No, they, when it was announced, it was a very short three paragraph blog post by Rick Ostro, the head of hardware, and it's just speaking on how North would closely align with Google's vision of ambient computing, of technology everywhere. And in terms of products, North stopped selling their focal smart glasses last December, and they're quite aggressively announcing the shutdown, actually. Apps, the mobile companion apps and the services will shut down by July 31st, and they're giving refunds to all their customers who've paid like $1,500 originally, I believe, and then $600 to $900. That is pretty unprecedented, getting a full refund. I wonder how that came to be.
Yeah, it makes me wish I had purchased one. or 10. But yeah. I think that it comes down to the price of the product is pretty high, and it also just happens to be around the same degree of high as Google Glass was, right? Mm-hmm. I think that might be the sensitivity here, which was Google is purchasing North, and Focals 1.0 was another separate AR attempt by this company that's now owned by Google, and I think Google is being sensitive to the fact that it would probably be a very bad look to have two different glass projects that they owned that tried to sell a vision of AR to people for $1,500, and both of them got shuttered and customers, and I guess in the case of the Explorer Edition, maybe there's an argument that they weren't customers as much as they were beta testers. Mm-hmm. Or signing up for something along the lines of the Apple DTK with the new ARM-based Max or whatever. It's probably more similar to that than being a retail customer. But regardless, I think that Google probably was sensitive to that image. And I think rightfully so.
And there's probably those refunds, probably they're not that many refunds to give.
Fair enough. That is probably the case. There was one anecdote I read. It was very funny from, I can't remember who it was. It might've been, I can't remember off the top of my head who it was. It was someone over at Android Central or Mobile Nations. That was saying that they went to the North showroom to do their fitting. And during their fitting, they had to go, or I think it was Michael Fisher, maybe had to go to the bathroom or something like that. And they went downstairs to like the office. Apparently they didn't have like a public facing bathroom. So they had to go in the area of the offices. And there was a corkboard or something that on the wall or a whiteboard that said, I'm trying to motivate the employees to meet their North glasses sales goal for the week. And apparently the goal was selling three pair.
Oh gosh.
And that was like publicly shown on the you know,
on
the board. And so if the downtown New York City showroom for North was aiming optimistically for three pairs to be sold in a week, that gives you an idea of how many refunds they're probably issuing. It's probably in the order of less than 500, I would guess. And so
I'll give them 1,000, but yeah.
If we say 500 at $1,500 a piece, that's well under $1 million. So that's the likely picture of how North is done. It also makes the shutdown all the more justified, I guess, in that, you know, with Glass, Google kind of lagged things and drug it out for years. And with this, they would have been dragging out something for a long time for not that many people. Maybe if you want to pie in the sky optimism, you could say that maybe Google's going to be launching something sooner rather than later. You know, if there's some version of Focals 2.0 that Google is actually going to be launching to the world in the next couple of years, then maybe that makes the shutdown sting a little bit less.
Yeah. But in the meantime, in the short term, they are not, unfortunately. Focals 2.0 is not launching this year or any year.
They say.
They say. It was never going to launch under Focals branding. Let's put it that way.
Sure. And saying we're not going to be shipping Focals 2.0 is saying we are disavowing what we've said so far about what Focals 2.0 is, and the product that we have publicly described as Public 2.0, that product is not launching. That does not. It still seems possible to me that bits and pieces of the Focals 2.0, I mean, actually, probably it's almost certain that bits and pieces of the Focals 2.0 development will eventually land itself in some kind of consumer product that Google launches.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, I don't think that, I mean, unless Google has decided there's something fundamentally wrong with Focals technology, which that's a whole conversation to have. I read from one, I don't know if you heard this, but I read from one person who used Focals for a good amount of time that refocusing their eyes between what was behind them or what was in front of them or in the distance versus the floating AR UI, like doing that constant refocusing between the close up, you know, interface versus, you know, looking at normal distances. They said that brought about some pretty severe eye strain after using Focals for a month or two. So, given that, and I've read some other experiences with the Focals that were not so great, I think it might be possible that Google scrapped it completely because they've decided something fundamental about the technology doesn't work.
Yeah, projection versus whatever. Having the screen projected onto a piece of glass within the lens.
Right.
And this is the time to say that Focals actually has Intel's Vont technology that they acquired, all the patents to that, which is beaming it straight into your eye.
Right. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's... There's so many possibilities here for what Google's doing with this acquisition. I think it's clear that they wanted to hire the team. The talent is sticking around, and they're staying on with Google at their I forgot which city, Waterloo area offices. But yeah, clearly the intellectual property is a big part of this acquisition, and it's possible that they could be pursuing. It's possible that this acquisition happens solely to get the Vont IP. You know, it's plausible.
It's absolutely plausible.
It's also plausible that they intend to launch some kind of iteration of 2.0 at some point in the next couple of years. It's also plausible they just wanted the talent. That's all they cared about. These acquisitions are never very transparent. So
I guess in terms of a speculating on what's happening now. If Google already had the display technology, or they had a rough blueprint of what their smart glasses would look like, do you think they would have bought for North? Because in my mind, this purchase kind of reveals where Google is. If they had their own vision of where they want the smart glasses to go, I don't think they would have bought an entire company. This seems like a way to bootstrap their efforts. It's curious to think about where they actually are before this acquisition and now that they have this team and talent.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this last week, and I don't think that they have significant internal... I don't think they've done significant internal R&D on Glass hardware since Glass got diverted to Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem likely that they've done that. I mean, maybe, but I think it's more likely what you're saying the more likely scenario, which is Google is kind of floundered on pursuing an AR consumer hardware product. And I feel like if Rick's team was developing, I said this last week, but I feel like if Rick's team was putting significant resources in developing something, I think we would know. And so I think it's more likely that this acquisition, especially, I mean, Rick was the one that made the announcement. I think this acquisition is showing that Google is not going to just let Apple, I mean, it's becoming clear every day that Apple is nearing the launch of something HoloLens-like in the next year or two, and then in the 3 to 4 year span, something that is likely similar to what Google's original Glass vision was. And I think that this acquisition is evident that Google is not just going to take that lying down, and that they're going to,
Yeah, because the important thing to remember is in this space, okay, Apple, clearly, with all the history, with all the talent, they look to be in first place in terms of smart glasses in this very early stage, purely speculative. But second right now is Facebook. And that should be terrifying to Google, because Facebook has, they have Oculus, they have whatever research divisions they have inside Facebook, building, I forgot the building name. But yeah, it's because it, for many, like building eight, yes, because in terms of like Facebook, smart glass, well, for anybody really, smart glasses are a way to have a physical relationship with a customer again after losing the smartphone, which Apple and Google obviously dominated that.
Yeah, I think it's possible to say that Facebook could be in first place. We just don't, if they are, we
that's
don't.
That's very true. That's very true. But I guess the customer trust thing would be the big question for every, for anything Facebook is going to, especially after this week. But yeah, the Oculus, they have been iterating very publicly on their display tech. They publish research papers every often. So yeah, they could be. And terms of a pure technology standpoint.
Yeah, for sure. Where that leaves us is it seems like Google, on Google's front, it seems like they're, it's very possible that I'm misinterpreting it, but it feels like Google.
That this is day one for them?
Yeah, it feels like this is day one, but it feels like it's like a oh crap moment, you know, like it feels like a man, we really squandered Glass, like I said last week, if they had put every resource behind it, as I think they probably should, I think that something internally happened with Glass. I think there was
They just scared them. It was a scarring experience.
Yeah, right. They swung the other way, it seems like. It seems like internally there was like, it was such a bad moment for Google's brand that it was like, wow, this was a serious case of hubris that really bit us in the ass, you know? Like, that's what it seemed like. And like, they swung, it seems like, I mean, we don't know, you and I don't know the internal politics really as much as we wish we did. We don't know the internal decision-making. I would love to be in a fly on the wall in those conversations when the future of glass was being decided and whether Google was going to continue investing in AR consumer hardware and what was going on. But it seems like from the outside that where that landed, at the end of the day was, Sergey, you're no longer allowed to be involved in anything ever again, basically.
Yeah, that's something and, that people forget. It was the co-founder of the company was such a public face for this effort. He, again, like, this probably isn't right in terms of where the inception, but Google was very public about this is something that's going to replace the smartphone. I'm pretty sure Sergey Brin also said that. Like, he said that to some, in some report or whatever, but they were very bold about this trend of what comes next after the smartphone. And as you were saying, it's a damn shame they didn't iterate, that they didn't keep iterating on the technology. And it, from the outside, it really looks like they stopped. They were able to do something. They were able to save some of that R&D and make some money back with enterprise. But after that, they didn't push for anything more ambitious.
Right, exactly. And it's like, it seems very clear that the direction they went was to swing the other way and to stop investing in this at all. I mean, they've been iterating slowly on the enterprise, enterprise version, but just barely. And it just seems like this North acquisition is them finally, it's like the pendulum was all in on this is the next smartphone. We're going to do this whole big Google I/O shebang and we're going to skydive and all this stuff. And it's going to be very, you know, like you said, it was the co-founder of the company. And so I think that elevated the influence that it had on the company and on the degree to which it burnt or it hurt them. Right. Like if this product had been pushed by some, you know, no name product manager somewhere underneath the Android team or something like this, then it wouldn't have blown up the way it did. It wouldn't have been the reputational problem that it was. And I think, they swung the other way and kind of got scared and Sergey just dipped from the company, it seems like, and decided to go fly his jet and ride around on his yacht and stuff.
Yeah.
And now with Apple seemingly nearing the launch of something and it's starting to, the picture for what Apple's trying to do is becoming clearer, which was Apple's strategy was pretty much the opposite of Google's. Google's was, we're going to try and ditch the smartphone. And this is going to be the next thing. And we're just going to build this brand new platform entirely separate from the phone. And it's going to be awesome. And obviously that faded pretty quickly. Apple's strategy has been, let's develop all of this technology out in the open, but in a way that does not seem relevant or related to AR at all. I mean, the advancements they've made in AR with the iPhone and even something as simple as the first party measure app in iOS and now more recently with app clips and stuff, like all these things are just being done in the open. And it's like, they're very apparent. Like if you piece together all the little things that Google or Apple has done publicly in AR over the last 4 years, and then you place them into a product, it would look like glass, but they just have not done the skydive. They haven't done the announcement of the first party hardware thing because it's not ready. It wasn't ready when Google did it. It's still not ready today, and it's not going to be ready for maybe 3 or 4 years, I don't think. So, this moment just feels like Google saying, oh, whoops, we definitely swung too far the other way. We should have been investing in this the whole time. And now we need to put the fire back under us to start building something so that Facebook doesn't eat our lunch. And
yeah,
so that's that to me, that's what I, from what I can tell, seems to be the story of this acquisition.
You know, the worst case scenario is that North works on Grass Enterprise. That's a very boring outlook. That's what they end up doing.
I don't think that's
no. Right. It's not. It's absolutely not. No.
And in fact, I think Glass Enterprise should be scared the same way that BlackBerry should have been scared when the iPhone was announced.
Yeah.
Right. Like.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
It's filled a little bit of a niche, you know, with enterprise customers for the last 4 years in a way that no one else was able to do because no one else threw money into building AR hardware that early in the game like Google did. But now that the mature hardware companies in the room, Apple and newly Facebook with Oculus, are going to do something AR, I would guess that Glass Enterprise's existence is very severely threatened because
absolutely.
Apple's AR consumer product, as Apple did with the iPhone, you know, Apple does not launch products that are strictly enterprise products for the most part. They launch consumer products that are just as good to be used as enterprise products as they are to be used consumer products. And that's Glass Enterprise's existential threat that might actually, and given the amount of money the enterprise is making, as far as I've heard through the rumor mill, that dollar amount is very, very significant. And I would guess that might be part of the decision to acquire this IP and this talent too. I don't know. I hadn't thought about that until just now. Which, if this is about Google trying to, I guess, preserve a revenue stream, that would further justify the acquisition. Anyways, before we close off or shut down for the week, let's talk about the fact that YouTube TV is now a cable provider and wants to steal all of your money.
I am context first. So YouTube TV from $49.99 now costs $64.99 per month for everybody.
How much did it cost before that?
It was 35. Most people, but they did a few steps in between, but yeah.
Yes. Started out at $35 a month for what for most people was probably plenty of channel, I think, content. And that was $420 a year. And now at $65 a month, it is $780 a year, which is very substantial price bump.
Yeah. So it's the dream of being able to cutting cords is it's gone. It's basically gone at this pricing. And the argument they've been making is that the rising TV costs, rising bundling costs, etc. And they did try to leave a positive seed to the future, and that they would that they're looking at unbundling opportunities, but at the same time it's all very dependent on these content deals that they have to sign, which requires all of them to be there. So I don't know if that's going to come to any fruition, but that's the state of play. And honestly, YouTube TV made the first move in this round of raising prices, but everybody else is going to follow eventually due to rising costs and such. So I think for the entire industry, cord cutting might be looking weird. So in Google's case, they should start bundling their services with YouTube Music, YouTube Premium, that kind of stuff. They should really take a look into at least getting the YouTube family of products together into one bundle. So that could be a saving grace. But I don't know. You're right. Yeah, it's very, it's not a good look for anybody.
Yeah, my question is why, I mean, I don't know this space very well, so I don't really have much deep analysis to offer, but why is Google not choosing to be a loss leader here? Like, why would they not just take the hit for, I mean, I think that there is definitely a trend away from traditional cable among our generation, right? Like, until this year, when someone on the phone like haggled me and basically forced me to add a cable thing to my internet package, which I decided to do rather than fight with the person on the phone. I haven't had cable or watched cable in 5 years. And actually, since I've got it, I've had it for a month now and I haven't watched it a single time. So whatever, we're going to that argument, that'll happen later. But you know, I think that there's definitely a move away from traditional cable with toward streaming services. Obviously, all these streaming services are now, you know, the largest cable company or cable channels or content creators are now putting their content in streaming services like Peacock with NBC, for example. And, you know, there's so many streaming services now and all of these streaming services are making their own original content. It seems inevitable that the traditional cable television service as a product is going away eventually. So why would Google not just take the loss and make YouTube TV the most attractive product? And I'm just curious if there's anyone that knows more than me. I'd love to understand why they wouldn't just take the loss for a few years. I'm wondering if maybe they are taking a loss even at the $65 price point. And I know Google's had a recent push for fiscal responsibility. And I know COVID-19 is pushing companies to be more fiscally responsible too. And so I know there's like so many different aspects of this, but it seems like it would be wise for Google just to, you know, take it for 5 years and get as many millennials as they can. And then after that, do what all these other, you know, startups, all disruptors do, which is after they finally get critical mass, then they start raising the price. It feels like if they're raising the price before they've reached any kind of critical mass, that is the big, that is the sign that this has been a failed initiative.
Yeah, it's I'm pretty sure it's like the fiscal responsibility. It probably did make money. It's YouTube TV is probably making money. And because inherently YouTube TV is a one country product. It's not scalable in terms of that. It's only available in the United States. It's really, I think to justify its existence, it needs to be profitable all the time. And it just the models of television, I don't see it scaling. It's only an unusual Google product. Let's put it that way. YouTube TV, it's only available for one country. It's there's a lot of conventionalities to it, or everybody has moved to offer its similar features as it. So I think, yeah, I think it just has to be that it just has to make money, and this is a reaction to it making money, requiring the price hike.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the price hike might put it in the black, meaning it's now making money. And then that's going to be, I mean, to me, for Google products, that feels like the beginning of the end, actually, because does Google have any, great, it's making money, it's financially profitable, but there's no trajectory to exponential growth, right? Like you said, this is a new product for Google. There's nowhere to go from here. If they've achieved or acquired as many customers as they're going to acquire in the United States, and they've already bumped the price up to the point where now it's a sustainable product. That feels like for Google, you know, for most companies, like, oh, that's a great business. Maybe in 5 years, they'll go public. For Google, that means, oh, this product's probably going to die because it is a decent business. It's not a, a trajectory that leads to some, I don't know, to somewhere greater.
Yeah, it's the media business is weird. And I think if any product has an exception from that 10x mandate, I would assume it'd be a YouTube product. So I don't know how that ends up playing.
The argument for getting YouTube TV was multifaceted at first because it was lower priced, you know, it was, you know, what a lot of people were hoping for in terms of getting all those core channels that they wanted at a price that was cheaper and has the technology advantages and being able to, you know, easy compatibility with Chromecast and, you know, the interface is nicer and so on and so forth. But now, I mean, Charter, for example, Charter Spectrum, you know, they charge like $60 a month for their baseline cable package. And you know what they have? They have apps on all the major platforms that let you watch all of your cable channels just like YouTube TV does. And so There's really no selling point for this product at all now, which I'm sure that the cable companies, which were maybe a little bit fearful of being disrupted, are pretty happy about. But it's just... I don't know. I see this product slowly dying from here because I just don't see Google continuing to invest in something that doesn't have a future.
Yeah. Well, that's a somber note to end on.
Other things that Google is not going to continue investing in, Pixel 3a.
Yeah, let's pile on. Yesterday we noticed that it went out of stock at July 1st. I wonder if it didn't hit me that yesterday was July 1st. But yeah, it's a nice round date to end sales on. It's out of stock. Stock has always been limited in the past few weeks. So yesterday it left the Google store and Google confirmed to us that they have ended sales of this product, and I think Google Fi went earlier this morning. So the Pixel 3a is only available to third-party retailers at this point, and they're not making any more. They're just probably running down stock, and we have no idea what's coming next, or rather when something is coming next.
No, we don't. And
it's so hard to... Who kills a product? Who ends a product before they announce the next one?
Google.
It's very disruptive. I'll tell you that in more ways than one.
It's like, did they literally just stop manufacturing the phone and then, as soon as the last phone was sold, they just let the Google store go to out of stock? Like, did they just let this happen? Or was this planned, as you mentioned, you know, yesterday was July 1st. Was it originally the plan to stop selling it on July 1st and then just reroute any remaining stock to the third-party retailers?
Oh, my.
I can't imagine they would, like you're saying, intentionally obsolete or discontinue a product before its successor, which is imminent, is announced. Why? It just doesn't make any sense.
This whole year in the hardware has been odd, even without presumed COVID-19 production disruptions. This should have been Google's successful 50 year. They showed some signs of growth, whatever, etc. But no, this is ending up being a very awkward year for the hardware line. And I hope the picture that comes out of it ends up being a cohesive narrative. But again, this is, who has done this before? I hope there's a story.
Well, I hope that there are products.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's just been a weird year, and there's still so much we don't know about what Google's actually planning for this fall. As we mentioned a couple weeks ago, we're expecting, just kind of to round out the show and I guess end on a hardware note, because hardware is what most people care about. We're expecting a Nest branded TV dongle of some kind that runs Android TV. Rumor has it might be called Google TV. We're expecting a new Nest branded smart speaker that we are expecting will be somewhere in between an original Google Home and a Google Home Max. We're expecting the Pixel 5, and now it seems like we're expecting the Pixel 4a to come this fall too. We're not sure, but there's been a couple rumors on top of each other that have suggested that it's going to get a weird announcement with a launch much later. So that's what we're expecting for hardware, hoping in the coming weeks, maybe before episode 100 happens, that we'll have more information and we'll be able to start detailing, I guess, more closely what these products are going to look like and what Google's big plans are for the fall. Hopefully they have something in the works. Otherwise, it seems like maybe this is their mulligan. I don't know. We'll see. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, for the show. It's been a slow week. We kind of trudged through this episode just trying to give you our best thoughts on all these developments. You can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every week on Thursdays or Fridays, and you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play. Not really much anymore, but you can also listen directly and download the podcast over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. Thanks to Amber for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.